Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. During each episode, we're diving headfirst into conversations with some of the most incredible RevOps leaders out there. Not CEOs, not big flashy executives, not vendors. We're talking to the people who are actually doing the work, the ones leading teams, the ones in the trenches, grinding it out every single day. We're taking things up a notch, getting deeper, having more fun, and as always, keeping it real. Remember our theme, RevOps Unboxed, and today we're unboxing it all. Let's get started. Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. I'm here with Ethan Lipman, VP of RevOps at Alchemy. Ethan, I am super pumped to have you on the show. We met in Austin a couple of months ago, been trying to get you on here. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Sandy. I'm excited to be here. You're an awesome person. Listen to a bunch of your content. So excited to be chatting with you.
Awesome. Well, very cool. Well, you know, why don't we start off and you can tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do over at Alchemy.
For sure. So Alchemy is a fintech company, so a financial technology company. The simplest way to explain Alchemy is there are about 9,500 FIs, financial institutions, banks, and credit unions in the country. And the vast majority of them are not a mega bank. So the vet like Chase, BOA, Wells Fargo. So the vast majority of them look to Alchemy or one of our competitors or a core provider to build and host their online digital banking. So whenever you go into your banking app and you're doing whatever it is you're doing in your banking app, the back end of that, if it is not a mega bank, is Alchemy or someone else like us. Not quite as good, but someone else like us. So that's kind of what we do. At Alchemy, I am the VP of Revenue Operations. So we're, like a lot of companies, really lean in our go-to-market. We put a lot of our emphasis on our engineering product and services. So my team consists of a few sales ops folks, Salesforce administrator, sales enablement, and then also consultant relations.
I love it. I love it. And you hit on enablement. So I know you said you have a lean team, but that's actually, if you think about it, you know, you are covering all the different functions. So tell me a little bit about having enablement as part of revenue operations. I don't think everybody does that. I'm a believer. Yeah. So give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, there's a few things we do that I think are slightly different, and I'll touch on the enablement piece first. So I love having enablement as part of RevOps, and I love it because typically what happens is enablement will work with sales ops or work with the Salesforce administrator on another team to push things through and get things done. When you're all on the same team and you're all under the same umbrella, it's just so much easier to collaborate and move things to the finish line, right? Also, they're closer to the technology. Typically, enablement isn't as tech savvy as your sales op folks or as your Salesforce administrator, obviously. So having enablement sit under the same umbrella, it just makes us all tighter. They learn and then they can pass those learnings on to the sales team. So I think it's ultimately more efficient. One other thing we do that's slightly different is how we manage our Salesforce instance. So we have an enterprise applications team that has the majority of the Salesforce and CPQ administrators. Mm. Sales RevOps, we have one Salesforce administrator. So anyone in sales or marketing, if we need something done pretty quickly, we work with our Salesforce admin who keeps everything ultimately tracked with that enterprise applications team for things like compliance, et cetera. But it allows us to move quickly and more efficient. So both those things, having enablement under RevOps closer to sales ops, and then having the administrator, right, the smartest person in the room when it comes to Salesforce functionality tied to enablement and sales ops, all brings real nice efficiency together.
Yeah, that works. That works really great. So I've been in a world where we didn't have the administrator on our team, and that's a challenge, right? And I realize in larger companies, there has to be governance, and you know, there's so many systems that touch each other, so I get that. But I like this structure of, you know, it's almost a dotted line. So they're still following and tracking with the team, following the governance and the rules and things like that. But you have the flexibility to do what you need to.
Exactly. She does dotted line into that enterprise applications team. And Sandy, you hit on it with I want to say within my first 6 months at Alchemy, we didn't have a Salesforce administrator in RevOps. And I was like pulling my hair out, because it's not that that team isn't trying to get things done for sales. They are, but they have an entire company to worry about.
Oh, yeah.
And they have dozens of systems to worry about. And I'm like, I just need this pick list updated.
Yeah.
So yeah, finally, after enough pick list updates, we pulled in our Salesforce admin.
That's great. I mean, that's a big accomplishment, because sometimes it's difficult. I'm sure there are people listening going, oh my gosh, how did Ethan get that done? I'm dying. Like, I wish I could get that done. So how did you approach that internally to be able to get through to the enterprise tech team to say, hey, like, hey, this is a need, but we'll play nice. We'll follow your rules. Like, how did you approach that?
For sure. You got to make allies. Complaining doesn't help. And another thing to keep in mind is our CRO says this a lot, your priorities are your priorities. They're no one else's priorities. So you have to keep hydraulic pressure if you want your priorities to get things done. So the way we ultimately got this done was collaborating with the head of enterprise applications at the time and saying, look, we each want the same thing. We want the company to move more efficiently and smoother while keeping all the systems intact in place and clean, and of course, while maintaining compliance. We could go two ways. There could be someone on enterprise applications completely dedicated to sales and marketing. The problem is that's now on your budget. You're paying for that person. Let us take on that cost. We'll take on the cost. That person dotted lines into you. They go to your daily scrums. Every single ticket makes its way onto that enterprise applications Jira board. But this person is dedicated to sales and marketing.
I love it. You're appealing to the greed, right? So yeah, the budget is key at the end of the day. But that's great advice, because it's definitely a challenge. And you know, and like you said, it's not that the broader team doesn't want to help.
Right.
There are bigger problems to solve. And the other thing is, they don't always have the specialization. They don't understand the workflows or the why behind it, or you know, what the best solution is, right? Just because a salesperson wants a pick list doesn't necessarily mean that's the right answer, right? And a really great Salesforce admin or architect that understands the sales process, the marketing process, they're going to come with their own ideas too, right? And say, hey, there might be a better way to implement this.
And that's a really good point that you hit on. When Salesforce administration sits in a centralized function, oftentimes for something to get done, either before it reaches the centralized function or after the centralized function in that funnel, somewhere someone in RevOps is giving the blessing and giving the okay, but ultimately kind of acting as like a roadblock, right? Not a roadblock, but a road bump, a speed bump.
Mm-hmm.
So by having someone, like you said, knowledgeable with the sales process, knowledgeable with the Salesforce, sits in the same pod as sales ops, it just speeds up that entire process. Because when the sales team comes forward, asks for the pick list, this person knows the process, knows best practices, knows how to implement, and then knows what to implement.
Now, I'm going to challenge the speed bump. You know, I think it's logic.
Sure.
Right? Not a speed bump. I'm just kidding. Well, you know, I was looking at your resume, if you will, on LinkedIn, and I noticed you're a product guy. So tell me a little bit about that. How'd you get here? How'd you start product, get to RevOps?
It is my superpower, and it is my kryptonite, having a product background. It is my superpower because I'm very crafty. I'm a great builder, can work with engineers and build, whether it's making the most out of delivering reports or building from scratch in Looker Studio a win-loss dashboard based on even something like you would find in Closed. I run all our win-loss interviews, right? So we can build a lot of really cool things. I built competitive intelligence chatbots in the past for two of my prior companies. There's a benefit. The kryptonite part is in product, it's all about an MVP, the minimal viable product. And I'm learning year after year, you cannot MVP humans. And RevOps, and specifically sales enablement, is so human driven that when we release something, in my mind, it's like, awesome, it's released, on to the next thing. MVP done. Zero adoption. No one picks it up. They're like, Ethan, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't know what to do? You just press these seven buttons and boom, you're out the door. It's fine. It's easy. No problem.
Yeah.
Superpower in kryptonite. So thank God I have someone, great people in enablement, and she is very good at the drumbeat of releasing and cadencing and making sure that people adopt things. But to answer the question, my background was in product. Spent years building marketing automation systems, e-commerce systems, and then went to Hearst Digital Media, which is Cosmo, Esquire, Men's Health, Women's Health, all those brands. Mm-hmm. And I was on a games and innovation team. So built, if you've ever been on Cosmo.com, Cosmopolitan, those fun games that you might play, my team built those. Huh. We built the polls on all of the Hearst. So if you've ever read an article on Harper's Bazaar or Elle or Marie Claire and taken one of those polls, that was my team. All the data that happened behind that. And what really got me into going into actually competitive intelligence, because I went into competitive intelligence after product, was something I built at Hearst while I was on the part of the team that built it, which was Hans. And it stood for Hearst Answers. And this was before ChatGPT. And it was a Slack bot that would take human input, translate it, and then deliver human output to data-based questions. So for example, anyone in the company could go and say, hey Hans, how many pairs of jeans sold today on Marie Claire? Or what is, you know, one of our competitors, Condé Nast, talking about the most or tweeting about most? So it looked at over a dozen endpoints, would take that human query, that English NLP query, and then put it into an answer that any non-business user would understand. So it was a great way to really democratize and disseminate information across the company.
Wow. Wow. That is an amazing superpower. And I love what you said about, you know, this is my superpower and my kryptonite. And just given your background, I would imagine you can kind of see RevOps like the Matrix, right? But understanding that you need an enablement person, or, you know, like, and I always look at that, like, I know my strengths. I know what the things that I'm really great at. So I want to hire great people that can do whatever the thing is better than I can. So that way, because again, we're all doers, right? We're not just sitting here in the fancy Oval Office, just, you know, pressing buttons and things like that. So, I always like to have a great admin, because I can, you know, yeah. I scratch the surface, but I want somebody who's really got deep expertise in that area and can build it. I can vision it. I know the mechanics. So I want to hire somebody who's like a rock star at doing that. And, you know, your point about, hey, this is why I have a great enablement person, you know, they help take this and bring it to reality and make it consumable in a way that people are going to learn and adopt it.
Yeah, you hit on something really important. It doesn't really make sense to hire your own skill set on your team, because you're really good at your skill set. Especially, we all run lean nowadays, right? Like, who's not on a lean team? So yeah, exactly. You want to hire people that have skills that you don't have. So when we were hiring this new enablement person, it was all about, like, when I'm interviewing people, I want to make sure there's someone who's going to slow us down, who's going to make me, who's going to push back and be like, no, Ethan, you can't release 10 things to the sales team on a Friday. They're not going to remember any of this. Someone who had sales coaching skills. That's something we didn't have in-house in RevOps. So we really wanted to focus on bringing some coaching skill sets in. So just echoing the sentiment, don't hire for your own skill set, hire for the skill sets that you don't have.
I love it. Tell me a little bit about something that you're working on right now. Do you have anything in flight, anything impactful that you might want to share?
No, we're not working on anything, Sandy. Just chilling.
Okay, what aren't you working on, right? What aren't you working on? And this is like March 28th, so I'm sure everybody's beating at the drum for the end of the quarter stuff. But
for sure. So right now we're working on implementing outreach. So we did some numbers last year, and basically there was a percentage of our ICP that we did not have activities logged against in Salesforce. And if it's not in Salesforce, it didn't happen.
Didn't happen.
So exactly. So the number one, the most important thing we were out to solve was how can we allow, we don't have BDRs, how can we get our reps to touch more prospects in their ICP? Because in our industry, if every rep just brings in one more opportunity per year, it's real money. So outreach implementation is going on, going through the best practices with them. We ultimately looked at four vendors and we did it with, so I'll tell you this, how we went about choosing it. Because in the past, what Ethan would have done, and I've made this mistake before, is buy a software for an entire team, thinking this is what everyone wants and this is what everyone needs. Poor adoption, ends up not the right tool, made a mistake, lesson learned. So this time we took it very differently. We took our sales advisory council. So we have a group of sellers from each part of our sales team, new logo, add-on sales, specialty sales, solution engineering, as part of a sales advisory council. We worked with them and we brought them through a very regimented selection process where first we looked at one vendor, then I'm not going to throw anyone on blast, one vendor, then another, then another, then outreach. We spent 2 hours with each vendor. We had a product scoring matrix. I created an entire vendor selection project plan, which was about a month and a half long, took about 10 hours of time from our reps plus one director. So ultimately the point being, this was rep selected. And we also have reps who were coming in knowledgeable about the tool. So that's hopefully really going to help us with this implementation when it comes out.
That is so huge. I love getting the reps involved. How many reps are you, like sellers, do you have in total-ish?
We are about, call it 50 or so, including no logo, add-on sales, solution engineering, RFP team.
Very cool. Okay. So you're able to get a good selection for an advisory council. I love it. I like the idea of having the advisory council. And, you know, we all have people that we ask, like I've got a few like, hey, check this out on chat or things like that. But I like this idea of having them officially involved and then they become your subject matter experts. There's your adoption right there. It's not something being pushed down in that kind of thing. So I'm also curious to see how the outreach with Salesforce implementation goes. I used that in the past. I thought it was a great tool, but it was a different time, didn't have the adoption, but it wasn't because of the tool. It was probably the way old Ethan would have done it is how we did it, you know, back then. But no, that's phenomenal. And that's just such great advice. I would love, I don't know if it's something that you'd be willing to share if people reach out or how they can reach out to you, but that type of selection tool and rubric, or what did you call it? A matrix?
Yeah, we just had a whole product scoring matrix. Ultimately, we actually I created the top level, like this is what we're trying to solve, right? Mm-hmm. And we looked at four products that all had four different specialties. The way I saw it is each product had its specialty. So one's specialty might have been call recording, but it also tertiary does drip campaigns. Another one might have been pipeline inspection, but tertiary it does drip campaigns. One was drip campaigns, but tertiary it does call recording, etc. So those are how we kind of chose the four products. Put in a score sheet that included a whole bunch of different criteria. And I didn't even have a vote, totally rep driven.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. As you're saying that, I'm guessing the four products because I've experienced some of this. And it's interesting because, you know, there's this general, I want to consolidate tools. So you have some of the big companies out there saying, okay, well, we specialize in call recording, but now we're doing prospecting too. Right. And so it's like, sure, we can do the prospecting too, but is the prospecting too as good as your foundational call recording, right? And then there's the people that, you know, are the opposite, right? They grew up in prospecting and now they're adding on the call recording and the AI, you know, the Gen AI and stuff like that, that come to be a part of it. So I like how you approached it. You said something really critical, like what's the problem we're trying to solve? The problem you're trying to solve is more prospecting to generate more opportunities because I can get you however many million, I forget that you said. So that's the problem to solve. The problem to solve is we're not recording calls today, you know? Right. So those, in addition to those add-ons, if you will, or additional features, potentially could replace others, but that wasn't the primary problem you're trying to solve, which I imagine is why you ended up with Outreach.
For sure. I will say their Kaya, their call recording tool, super impressed. The team was really blown away by it. So that was awesome. One other fun thing that we're working on is on the enablement side, on the coaching mm-hmm. side, everyone has a sales methodology. Not going to talk about Medic, MedPic. Going to talk about The Jolt Effect. The Jolt Effect is a book mm-hmm. that I think I spoke about it at the RevOps group thing we were at together. What's it called? I'm blanking out.
Jolt Effect. That's Matthew Dixon, right? ROA, the Revenue Opera, Austin, Thank the you. Summit. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So Jolt Effect is, I'm not going to call it a methodology. It's not, but it is a way we are working on training sellers. And the idea is you, 56% of everyone's number one loss reason is no decision, right? That's the number one loss reason across any company. What they found after studying something like 2 million calls, sales calls, is that 56% of the time, no decision is the winner. It's actually because of indecision. So the reason we actually lose deals the most is not no decision, it is indecision, indecisiveness. It is not the fear of missing out, it is the fear of messing up that drives people to stay with their standard system that ain't doing it for them.
Right.
So Jolt Effect, Jolt Training has been something we've really been working on. The book is phenomenal. Actually, with Outreach, I'll tie it back. We had an amazing sales rep there. And I was on a call with her. I was taking a walk with my dog. And I said something. She said, hey, I don't think we should do this demo. She said, what order do you want to do the demos? I said, I want to do call recording, then drip campaign. She said, I don't think so. I think we should do it the other way around. And here's why. I was like, wow, have you ever heard the Jolt Effect? That was Ready Jolty of you. And she's like, yeah, actually, we all had to do it like last year at SKO. How did you know? I was like, well, every other sales rep just would have agreed with what I said, right? I'm the prospect. I'm always right. But you pushed back. So recommendation to everyone out there, read the Jolt Effect, because we all want our prospects on the latest and greatest technology, because that's going to serve their customers better. And this book is just a path to help eliminate customer indecision.
I love it. I love it. I mean, that's the evolution of the original Challenger sale, right? Like that was, that's kind of where it's gone. So how are you implementing that then? So you guys got the book, are you enabling it? Is your enablement person driving that? What's going on there?
Yeah. So at SKO, that was really the focus of my presentation at SKO, was all on the Jolt Effect and just uncovering how much indecision costs the industry, costs us, highlighting a couple deals where, again, I run our win-loss interviews, so I could bring out quotes that really highlighted indecision. And now it's just a continuous kind of drumbeat of Jolt Effect from our enablement person on making sure the team is aware of it and just really keeping it top of mind. We use like virtual sales rooms. That's a great way to limit the exploration. L and Jolt is limit the exploration. When you give someone a virtual sales room, you are now telling them, hey, you don't need to look all over the internet to go find content. The content you need is right here. Your demos are right here. Best practices are right here. Implementation plan is right here, et cetera. So it's also helped us find the right tools, right? When you find the right tools to match, in this case, Jolt, or whatever your methodology is, if they reinforce each other.
I love it. I love it. We're getting ready to roll out a digital sales room in this quarter. Yeah. So I'm really excited about it. I didn't go with a heavy enablement tool. I went with a kind of newer, lighter enablement tool, but I'm really excited about it. It's getting those digital rooms set up. I think it's just a great way to interact and have the right content. And particularly to the if the digital sales room enables a two-way chat like conversation, yeah, like that to me is a game changer. Because when I was working with the sales rep for this tool, it was great because I could just jump in the room, and because nobody has time for email anymore and like wait for the, so I just jump in the room and just ding 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 ding, ding, and he'd be like, I see his little bubbles coming back, and he had his little mutual action plan for me. So I love the sales experience for that too, because they're using the shit that they sell, which is great, because then I can see how it's actually used in real life. But I think that's a game changer for sales reps, because you can control the content in like you said, just limit what the prospect has access to in your,
yeah,
they always have the latest too. They're not searching in their email from an attachment, and
nice,
even tracking links and attachments. I mean, that's, I guess, better than just sending an attached PDF, like, but the digital sales room, I think is definitely critical and the way to go. So very cool.
Yeah. It's been awesome for us, and we have a whole bunch of stats around just how they've been working for it, for us and for the sellers who use them. And, you know, one recommendation for everyone out there, it's not a surprise, but utilizing technology for technology's sake in sales is not going to increase your win rate. You have to implement the best practices, and every rep has to be doing the best practices, because it's really clear, Sandy, you're going to see it when you roll out your BSRs. Some reps are going to be bought in, and they're, mm-hmm, going to do a welcome video, and they're going to create a mutual action plan, and they're going to upload the Zoom recordings, and they're going to make it great and really custom and put on the custom banner. And their win rates in deals where there is a BSR will go up. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be the folks who aren't doing that, and you're going to see their win rates in deals stay the same. Sure, but they're not getting that added benefit of this new great tool you gave them, mm-hmm, or they're adopting it, but they're not really bought in. They're not, right, uploading every Zoom recording. They're still attaching a PDF in an email rather than, yeah, in the email saying, hey, added the PDF to the virtual sales room with a link to the virtual sales room. So it's those little best practices to really just remind the team. And then, of course, reinforcing it with data. So on our weekly, bi-weekly rev up call, we'll share BSR stats, and we'll share what the people who are leading the pack in terms of win percentage are doing on their BSRs, and share those best practices so that everyone else can try to learn from the best.
Did you say you call it a rev up call? Like you're going to rev up the team? That's cool.
I never thought of that.
Is it? Yeah. Oh, you didn't think of that?
That's
great. You call it that?
Yeah.
You didn't think, oh, okay. All right. I like it.
That's really good. Thanks for that.
Rev up.
I think that's what we heard at last year's conference. Someone, mm-hmm, said they call it the rev up call. And Stephanie and I looked at each other. We're like, oh, that's great. Let's just go with that. That's way better than the sales enablement all hands.
Yeah. Yeah. All hands. All hands always mean something different too to some people. Like those are the scary meetings that pop up on your calendar. You don't want that.
No, not always.
When you give these tips for people to use the digital sales rooms, like how are you doing that? Are you like doing, yeah, office hours? Are you sending videos? Like what's your best practice?
Yes. And to both those things, we also have a monthly, something we call a sales and success digest. It goes out to the sales and the customer success team, and it highlights the most important things that happened that month for them. So whether it's webinars and information to share with prospects, or new pricing and packaging updates, whatever the case may be. We also utilize a tool called Speckit, and, mm-hmm, you can use it in a lot of different ways. I know it is like also a sales CMS, but we have a larger sales CMS. What we really use Speckit for are the banners. So they have a kind of banner ad functionality and inline help. So it's Tech Tip Tuesday, where a rep logs into Salesforce and they're not annoyed by the banner because they expect it to come. You don't want to, mm-hmm, when people want to get things done, you don't want to roadblock them. So if I'm a sales rep and I'm going to Salesforce and I want to get something done, log a call, whatever the case may be, I don't want a pop-up video that I was not expecting. That's annoying. But if they know to expect it on Tuesdays, it's not annoying, mm-hmm, it's expected. So on Tuesdays, Tactic Tuesday, there is that kind of inline banner ad when they go to Salesforce that they could watch the video, whatever the case, whatever it is we want to train them on or reinforce that Tuesday. And then you could even have a mini kind of test or quiz afterwards. so we could make sure that folks are actually adopting it and looking at the content.
I love it because it reinforces to the my fundamental belief that like you should live in your CRM, right? So yeah. As a head of RevOps, we want to make everything enabled in the CRM, single sign-on, you log in once, all the stuff you need is right there, or you can get to it from there, you know, if it's not possible for it to be right there. That's a really great tip and great share for sure. Do you have any like things that you hang your hat on, like things that you always tell people that they should do if they're in RevOps or they want to be in RevOps that you might be able to share with the listeners?
Couple things. What I tell people in RevOps is democratize, disseminate, narrate all the information. In RevOps, you know the pipeline better than anyone else. You know your forecast better than anyone else. You should know your win-loss data better than anyone else. And hopefully you have someone, Alchemy, it's me, who's also doing win-loss interviews and always keeping an eye on the market. So you know the market better than anyone else, and you know your recently signed customers and not customers better than anyone else. So you have this massive wealth of information in RevOps. It's not doing any good if you just hoard it. You're not helping anybody by that. So you have to democratize information, which means make it available. Then you have to disseminate the information, which means push it out. And then you have to narrate the information. Because if somebody just looks at information once a month, they have a really narrow scope. But you, RevOps, this Oracle, as a team, have the full width, the full breadth, and the historicals. So you want to put your narration on it, right? You want to actually kind of say what's happening. That way your executives or whoever the case may be can look at your reports, can look at what you're producing, whatever you produce, and understand it quickly and easily. You can do this just with a TLDR, right? TLDR, give the 2 or 3 bullet points, and then all the information for those folks who want to disseminate it, who want to read through it, excuse me. So democratize, disseminate, narrate in RevOps, that's big. For folks who want to get into RevOps, I'd say, I think I shared this at the RevOps conference we were at, and this was a piece of advice my dad gave me, and it was, don't do the job you have, do the job you want. Of course, don't stop doing the job you have. That would be a bad idea.
Right.
But don't focus on the job you have, do the job you want. So if you want to get into RevOps, start pulling reports, start becoming a master of your pipeline. Start knowing your forecast better than anybody. Start knowing your pricing and packaging better than anybody. Start really understanding your win-loss data. And I bet you at your company, they're probably not doing a great job at disseminating and narrating that information. So just start doing it. If you're in enablement, own this. If you're in sales and you want to pivot into RevOps, own this. You're that seller who really cares about win-loss. Amazing. Everybody wants that. If you're in product and you want to get into RevOps, that's your way. Build a product for sales. Don't not do your actual job, but do it on the side, because you could probably build some really cool products for sales once you get access to Salesforce or whatever tools it is you're using. So those would be two pieces of advice.
Man, this is great. Great advice. Just great discussion. I definitely think we could keep going and going and going, but I'm sure we both have meetings at some point. But I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show and have this discussion. I think you've shared a wealth of information that is going to be so helpful to people. People can reach out to you on LinkedIn. Is that the best place if they have
any questions? Yeah, find me on LinkedIn. Like I think all it's right. Just Ethan-Littman.
Yeah. Awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for your time, Ethan. I appreciate having you, and we will chat soon.
I appreciate you, Sandy. Talk to you later.
This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed in partnership with the Revenue Operations Alliance. Until next time, keep unboxing.